Thank you, James Henry Bedell, for the very energetic Climate Champion podcast specially composed music. I'm Lee Krivat, and every Monday I publish a new episode where I talk to a climate champion helping to mitigate climate change. Hopefully, you find their experiences interesting, educational, and inspiring. I do, and that is the motivation for the podcast. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please check out my website at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com and send me an email. Welcome to episode 14 of Climate Champions. This week, I sit down with Eric Clifton, founder and CEO of Orison, an energy storage company with a battery product that is modern designed, great looking, and plug and play behind the meter. Eric has an exciting product and fantastic IP that enables an individual to plug a unit into an outlet in their home or business and create their own personal microgrid. Orison enables your refrigerator, lighting, communication, and other critical loads to remain operational during an electric outage. A load is an industry term that means anything that uses electricity to operate. Speaking of industry terms, I'm going to lay another one down, that's a clue, that needs some definition. So here's a new segment called Learn a Term. And to help, I'm going to ask my brother Jeremy for his thoughts on what the term duck curve means.
Look, if you want to talk about climate change and you want to talk about the duck curve, I mean, I think it's kind of obvious what duck curve would mean. I mean, you got ducks, right? Like, and when the climate is good, when things are really good, the ducks, they walk in a straight line. That's they have a formation. But when the climate is bad, you know, you got windy, weird, bad weather, the ducks start to like drift apart. They don't walk in a straight line anymore, and they actually start to form a curve. And you could actually, from above them, when they're walking, you could measure the curve. And the more the curve gets, the more that it expands, and like the wider the curve, it shows the effects of the environment. Because look what it's doing to the ducks. The ducks aren't walking in a line anymore. They're walking in a curve. So the bigger the curve, the more it shows. And then you could show the rate of the curve is growing. As time goes on, the rate grows and changes at a faster pace. So we're in trouble. If we see that these ducks aren't walking in a straight line and the curve is getting worse, we know we got problems.
Oh my goodness. Jeremy and I both do improv comedy. He performs on weekends with Comedy Sports in Sacramento. I'm not sure whether that bit will bring you in or scare you away, but if you're in Sacramento and you want some good laughs, Comedy Sports is a great bet. With regard to the duck curve, and this gets a bit complicated, if you look at a graph that depicts the overall electricity usage in California during a sunny, cool day, and call that the top of the duck, and then overlay it with the amount of energy not being generated by solar energy, so traditional methods of generation, that would be the bottom of the duck. And the middle, especially if you color it yellow, is the duck itself. Now at 2 p.m., you kind of get a duck belly. And the reason it looks like a belly is because as the sun rises, you get more solar, which drops that lower line of traditionally generated electricity. And then later, as the sun starts to set, you get less of that energy generated by solar and more of it being generated by traditional methods. So it creates an anti-solar curve, which looks like the belly of the duck. Another interesting aspect of the duck curve is as the sun sets, so you get less energy from solar and you need more energy from traditional methods. At the same time, people are coming home from work. They're turning on their televisions, they're cooking, they're heating their homes. So your requirement for energy actually grows. And this creates what looks like the duck's neck, where you have this huge ramp up of traditional fossil burning energy generation sources. Clear as day, right? Okay, just Google duck curve. One of the issues with the duck curve is that ramping up electric generation so quickly from coal and gas isn't efficient or even always possible. Going from the minimum generation, where there is plenty of solar, the belly of the duck, to the maximum, where there is no solar, the head of the duck, is difficult. It's dirty and it's costly. And the duck belly can only get so fat. So when the belly is very low, solar energy is often curtailed, wasted, not used at all. Getting back to Orison, in order to maximize the value of the solution, Orison will help the grid and customer by charging and discharging intelligently, charging the battery when energy is more plentiful, less expensive, and carbon-free, like the belly of the duck, and discharging optimally as well, like during the difficult ramp up the neck of the duck, which saves you money and helps the grid. So you pick up the Orison at the mall in the afternoon and dine on duck curve for dinner. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm talking to Eric Clifton, the founder and CEO of Orison. Orison makes a self-installed home energy battery. It's a super exciting product. I really think it could change everything because unlike a lot of the competitive products, you don't need to get an electrician to come out and install it. And it still can basically make a mini microgrid and shift energy usage. So it's very exciting.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I want you to talk about, if you can, the meaningful moment in your life when you felt that climate change was something you wanted to devote some of your time or a lot of your time to do something about.
Sure. So back in 2002, I started a company that was designed to give creature comforts to people in their home. So kind of like we have now, you know, Amazon Echo and Siri and all of those things. It was a home automation product that when you come into your house, you could say, hey, I'm home, and the music and lights would do. And we did that way back in 2002. And the problem is obviously timing and market.
It's too early.
It was too early. But that position put me to work with one of the largest land developers in the country. And they asked me to come on board and look at their portfolio from a perspective of basically environmental impact. And my job was a little bit different than most people in that type of role looking at you know, our total global impacts, because what I was tasked to do was to find the true practical, not gimmicky things that we could implement in our master plan developments that reduced the materials that we used, or the new materials. So we did a lot of reclaimed materials. It reduced the maintenance on the entire community in the homes. It overall reduced the cost for people and created a better quality of life in these communities. And so in doing that, I spent a lot of time working on the actual things that performed, as opposed to a lot of things that, I hate to say it, but like lick and stick green. Like there are a lot of things that they call it green, but the reality is because you stuck it on doesn't mean you now have a green type of world plan, right?
Like greenwashing, where
yes,
it feels
truly
good, but it's not making the impact.
Truly, truly. And so that led me, obviously, into a massive research type of role. But on top of that, it landed me a seat on the National Board of Directors for the United States Green Build Council, which put me in a position to actually help with writing the lead criteria and some of the durability plans. We founded the neighborhood community profile and new construction profiles with LEED and my company at the time. And so doing that, it put me in a little different perspective, because even though climate change is the topic of this, I actually personally believe that it's the resource depletion, which obviously has a massive impact on climate change ultimately, that is the first thing we need to address. Because if we can actually reduce the way that we're burdening our resources, because we're destroying them at a rate that is unprecedented at the moment. And you look at, we can't even recycle properly and all the things that have come out after years of trying to recycle. We've got to address that, which ultimately reduces our impact on the environment, which then gets to what everybody's trying to achieve is right, being better stewards of what we have and reducing climate change.
You don't have to say there is a moment like this, but yes, was there a moment that you still remember when you felt inspired to do something?
Yeah, actually, so there were two. One of them was the tornadoes that took out Greensburg, Kansas. And then the second one was, which came just after, is Katrina. And the reason why is I spent a lot of time in both areas, working at the time on doing low impact housing, but highly amenitized leased platinum net zero energy homes for those areas. And unfortunately, it didn't result in us putting houses on the ground. We put a couple houses on the ground, but we were supposed to put 15,000 homes on the ground. But in that moment, being in a city like Greensburg, when it's literally wiped off the map and seeing people have a clean slate and an option, how do we rebuild? It just really struck me on the impact of what we do. You have all those materials that are destroyed that are there. You have many choices on how we could rebuild and do that and better the people's lives ultimately. And so seeing that really kind of changed me, I think, for the long haul of, it's not just about changing our habits, but it's actually about bettering people's lives. And if you can't do that second part, if you take something away from them, we're going to fail at this mission because nobody is going to do that for long term. Does that make sense?
Yes, I was talking to somebody on one of these podcasts that was talking about sacrifice and making sacrifice in order to help the solution. And I understand that. And it may come to the point, especially if we don't do anything quickly, where we have no choice but to make sacrifice.
Agreed.
But I don't think that that's something that people will willingly adapt to.
No. No, and you know, the biggest thing that we see is even in like our products, one of the themes was make it simple for people, make it do something that actually betters their lives while doing better for the environment, right? And so theme of Orison is I can sort of Apple-esque, I can mail you a product, you literally can plug it into your home, and we can do bidirectional flow through each individual circuit in your house or on a collective for the whole thing. We never export power to the grid. So we create this microcosm of, in a time when the utility has a peak in demand, we create negative demand so the utility doesn't see that coming from the customer's home. We're not exporting on the grid. We're not trying to be grid services in the aspect of people trying to be peaker plants or these little assets.
No right? net metering necessary.
No net metering necessary. And honestly, it stabilizes what infrastructure is already in place that we as ratepayers paid for, instead of doing what a lot of the other storage companies are doing, say kick your utility to the curb, that, you know, why pay them anything, put your solar and put your storage and be. The reality is we, as an environmental perspective, paid for that infrastructure. There's billions of dollars into that, and it's a good infrastructure. It just needs to be used better for us. So if the utility can provide the services that we want on the customer side of the meter, and we better people's lives, but it creates a positive impact on the utility grid, then it's a win for everybody. And we didn't waste, going back to my land development days, we didn't waste the infrastructure, the resources that we've built already by trying to now replace it with something else. Let's utilize it better. Does that make sense?
It does. Actually, the way that I think it's rolling out now is you're adding the two costs.
Yes.
Because you're putting in the cost to put the new stuff in a way that's an enemy of the old stuff. Yes. So you're paying twice. But if you leverage the old stuff,
yes,
then you are reducing the overall cost.
That's right. That's right. And if we're successful, technically, storage should be a grid asset that is given as part of the service to a customer, not paid for by the customer in the sense of I don't have to dish out 15 grand like on some of the other units out there, right?
Can you talk about why climate change and the mission that you're on is personally important to you?
Well, I mean, like everything. So I make no mince about the fact that I'm a believer. I think that the Lord put us here for a reason, and ultimately, we as people are selfish by nature, and people need to understand it. People don't like that message, but the reality is we are selfish. We want mine. We want it our way. I believe that we can actually take care of the environment and do better with what was provided to us by using our selfish inhibitions to actually better the cause. So what I mean by that is if we develop products that personally help people better the way that they address the environment, then we've succeeded. So me personally, I think it's always been my heart to show that that can be done, as opposed to like these two polarizing views of we have to take something away from people in order to better the planet, or heck with that, we don't care about the planet, we're going to just keep taking and taking. These seem to be the sort of major extremes, but polarizing views, right? And so for me, I don't think it has to be that way. And so the personal thing for me is really, how do we show the world that you can have exactly what you want? You can have those creature comforts. You don't have to take them away. We don't have to live without, but we can live better, making better choices.
It sounds to me like the Jeff Goldblum part of The Big Chill,
yeah,
where he's saying that he's not very likable,
yeah,
because he's so selfish.
Yeah.
But it's just that his selfishness is so apparently selfish.
Yes, right.
Whereas some of the other characters, he's yeah. saying that they feel good when they do good, but yes. they're still being selfish.
Yes.
Yes. It's just that the things they get excited about are things that are good for other people.
So true. So true. So true.
So I think you've done some of it for me right now.
Yeah.
But when you talk about someone that doesn't understand the mission that you're on, and yeah. you want to explain to them in a way that they can understand why this is important,
yeah.
and it should be important to everybody,
yeah.
what do you say?
On which aspect? On the storage of what we're doing, or on the mission of resource depletion?
On the mission of resource depletion.
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I say to people is, the reality is what is the goal that we're trying to achieve? And at the end of the day, we're trying to reduce our environmental impacts. And in order to get there, what do we have to do? And so I think the world is lost in a fight of beliefs as opposed to trying to do the right thing and get there. And ultimately, it doesn't matter what people's belief is, and I'm going to get lambasted for this, but it doesn't matter if you believe that we're the cause of global warming, if global warming is real, if like none of that matters, because at the end of the day, if you can find the common ground that people believe in, i.e. I'm going to reduce my cost because I'm selfish, right? I'm going to reduce my costs. I'm going to live better because I don't have to worry about like fluctuations in grid and all of those things. And those things aren't going to impact me. And at the end of the day, I'm not going to have to buy this consumerism thing constant, 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 because I found something that works for me and I can stabilize that. If you can convince the total climate, I hate using names, and that's part of my big issue in life. But what someone would say is somebody who's totally denying that there is anything going on and we don't care and it's all about us. If you can convince them that by doing this or buying this product or whatever is actually good for them in the way they live, and ultimately you achieve the resource reduction, it doesn't matter what they believe. We're still achieving the goal of trying to better the environment and do better with what we have. Does that make sense?
Yes, when I used to talk about electric vehicles and why they were good,
yeah.
and I am a big believer of electric vehicles,
yeah.
I used to say that maybe the reason that we should be investing in electric vehicles and moving toward that yeah. is for climate change.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason we should be doing it,
yeah.
but probably the reason we're going to do it, and that's okay,
yeah.
is because it gives us energy independence.
Sure.
It reduces just pollution and
sure.
gives us better breathing.
Breathing.
And I think from a security perspective,
yeah.
not being dependent on other countries 100%. For our fuel is
yep.
a big deal.
Yep. Yep.
And if someone's going to attack the grid,
yeah.
having our own capability
mm-hmm.
to produce energy,
that's right.
using solar,
yep.
and putting it in our vehicles and then powering our homes with that,
yep.
that gives us a lot more potential to withstand an attack that way.
But again, think about this. That appeals to anybody because it's, I'm now resilient. They can't take it away from me in an instant. It may be I have a time, like a generator and all those things, right? But ultimately, if the messaging is done right, you can posture that in a way that it appeals to anybody, whether they care about the climate or not. And I hate putting it in that context because I think everybody ultimately cares when it starts impacting their lives via whether it's cost or looking at the air that they breathe, right? But I totally agree with you is if you look at, yes, I think there is a initial push that says look, we're basically running clean air vehicles and it's reduced. But I think even beyond that, if you're looking at where the real like major issues are when it comes to transportation and vehicles is the higher density cities, which they're growing greater and greater. And you look at the next generation, they honestly don't want to own houses anymore. They want to be in an apartment in this block this week and an apartment down there, and they use Uber and everything else. So they kind of get away from all of that. So I think when you start looking at those changes, I think you're going to see a massive shift in cities before, and honestly, it should. We have higher density of people. It's more meaningful. But in that, I also think they need to start shifting to some of these lighter, like personal rapid transit. And there's a company called Skytran, and they have a mini maglev overhead system that they proposed actually to California when they were doing the original bullet train proposition. And they said, look, the bullet train, and I forget what speed there is, like over 200 miles an hour, whatever it's supposed to get to. But when you put in all the stops, it never gets over about 120 miles an hour because you have to factor in the stops. And this thing would go 160 to 180 mile an hour continuous because it has on and off capability. So basically, if I wanted to go from here to San Francisco, I could get in a car and literally go all the way to San Francisco without ever stopping if I so chose at 180 miles an hour. And they could do the entire thing for like, I mean, it was ridiculous. It was like $100 million total, where, you know, billions to do 20 miles. And so I guess the point of that is I think the catalyst, everybody inherently knows. And even if they tell you they don't believe this, I believe it's sort of like breathing. It's a visceral response. We know that we are negatively impacting our environment. Just inherently, we do. God put that in us. We know that. And so I think ultimately you use the catalyst to get to the masses that say, hey, I want to do the right thing for the right reasons. And then the happy positive on the back end of the message is, oh, by the way, it's really cool. It's fun and you're going to enjoy it, right? It's not, oh, we're going to shut your AC off on you. That just makes people angry.
You already told me a little bit about Orison. Can you tell me more?
Sure. So we started on this journey 5 years ago, so a little bit before, actually 5.5 years ago, a little bit before storage really came into vogue. And the reason why I point that out is we hit a lot of obstacles. The first was, it's too small, it's not going to do what I want, because people had in mind having these big stacks of batteries somewhere. And the reality is that's not really necessary. If you think of solar and the way they do it, they look at what your footprint is, your total usage, and they basically shave off 80 to 90% of that, as opposed to trying to overbuild way and beyond. And so storage is kind of the same thing. Batteries, lithium can be contested, as we're going to have a huge problem down the road because we're putting, you know, billions of these things out there right now. And what are we going to do when we have to recycle them? And is it creating another environmental problem? We're just pushing it off a little further. And so our philosophy is right-sizing the system for somebody, giving them flexibility to scale it up or scale it down. So we come in 2 kilowatt hour bricks is basically the way that it comes out. It is the only battery pack that will be certified to be in a conditioned space, meaning inside of your house. It's designed like art. Think Apple. It is a beautiful product. We have a freestanding one, and we have a wall-mounted one. And the wall-mounted one was designed to be very slim, so you literally could put it on your wall and put a cover on it, like think your cell phone case, to make it art, so it's personal to you. Or you can put it behind like a refrigerator or another appliance so it disappears and you never see it in the first place. And so there's a lot of ways to deal with it. But the whole purpose of it is I can ship it directly to your door. You can pick it up, carry it in, mount it, plug it in, and it's now working for you. Through your app and web services, you'll be able to see how it's performing and the value of it against your utility bill. And that then enables you to go, oh, I need to scale. I really need 3 more of these things because that would actually fit. So you don't need a technician to come out. You don't need somebody to coach you on it. You literally buy the first one, which right now we're targeting about $1,500, $1,600 US price tag for that first unit. And then we have extension units that hang off of that one for about $1,200 for another. So you increase your size in 2 kilowatt hour increments. And so the product is not only the only self-installable product, and it's taken us 5 years to get through all of the regulatory hurdles and make sure that we were safe for both the customer as well as linemen, because that's a big issue if it were to export, which we do not export onto the grid. And then we had to co-invent several other products. One of them is an energy monitor that's self-installable. And the reason why that's so relevant in pretty much every country outside of the U.S. that's on a 220 volt system, you cannot install these little CT clamp things that technically is illegal to do in the U.S. too, but it's not that big a deal to do. And so we had to invent a way to actually be able to literally adhere a sensor to the face of the unit without opening the breaker box panel and get that communication back. And so we have a very high fidelity energy monitor that enables us to do that as well. So you have to have the total package or you can't do self-installable, because if you don't have a monitor, you don't know when you're exporting to the grid. And so we can't give the utilities safety and security and the regulatory bodies of knowing that we never export to the grid. And so, yeah, so it really stops any fast followers. But the purpose of it is to look at storage from a totally different way. It's modular. It can go in apartments. Going back to what I was saying, is the highest density housing in the world is now cities, right? And it is scalable, i.e., you live in a McMansion of 4,000 square feet. You've got 15 of them, you know, spread out through your house because you wanted 30 kilowatt hours worth of storage. And your kids now all leave and you move into a condo that's 1,000 or 1,500 square feet and you really only need one or two. Well, if it's supplied by the utility as part of your service, you can actually give, you know, 13 of them back, or you can give them to friends and family, or like it's totally modular. So you can actually downsize, move them, and scale as you live.
That's very cool. I had a question. If energy storage gets lighter as they can pack more into the same amount of space, will you change that amount or will you just make them lighter?
So the answer is both. We actually have a scalable version that will kind of do an announcement toward the end of the year that literally is a kind of a rack and stack. But what we found, to your point of energy density in an individual cell, what we found is as we're building our standard panels, which are about 28 inches high by about 32 inches wide, that panel is under 3 inches thick in total. The way that the battery packs are morphing, even over the last couple of years, we went from these two massive 1.1 kilowatt hour bars that went in that like took up the majority of that space to now we have four smaller battery packs that take up that space. And there's actually more room within our original intended size. So what we're anticipating is when we go to what we call the plus units, which is the battery only, you take the power electronics out and all the communication stuff out, we might be able to go in one of those individual units up to a 3.6 kilowatt hour system. So add another kilowatt hour in the same size package. So yes, we're always looking at density. But I think ultimately my personal feeling is the smaller and lighter that you can make it, 2.2 is a good size unless people really have to expand. But the smaller you can make it, the more places it will disappear and it becomes easier for people. So we'll always get smaller and smaller and denser, but scalable is always there. Yeah.
So you're going to correct me here, I'm sure, but this is how I tell my wife about the product.
Okay.
I tell her that because it's thin, 3 inches tall,
yes,
we can put it on top of the refrigerator,
yeah,
and it won't stick out the sides.
Yeah.
We can plug the refrigerator into the battery,
yes,
and then the battery into the wall.
Yes.
And when there's an outage on the grid, our refrigerator won't know it.
Yes.
Because it'll get powered by the battery.
Similar to a UPS, yes.
But since that only happens once a year or so,
yeah,
although it happened last week,
yeah,
we had a 20-minute outage here.
Yep.
But that during normal operation, yeah, when the grid is fine, the way the battery will pay for itself,
yeah,
we are on a time of use, yep, rate that's, yep, significant between off-peak,
yeah,
and on-peak.
Yep.
So we can make sure we always fill it,
yep,
during super off-peak or when the energy is more available on the grid or the impact, yep, in climate change or carbon is,
yes,
less.
Yep.
We could fill it then.
Yep.
And then we can discharge it when it's more expensive or the carbon impact is more.
That's right. So here's just the two minor corrections in that.
Thank you.
We don't want it on top of a fridge because all your heat goes to the top of the fridge.
Oh,
and you sure don't want batteries on top of
heat.
But we made it thin enough that literally if you look behind your fridge, you have at least 3 inches of a gap back there.
Great.
So you can mount it to the wall and roll your refrigerator back into place. So that's the one. The second piece is, because we're a learning system and we have learning algorithms, we actually will do the time of use thing for you and manage it. You can see in your readout on your app that it's doing those things, and then you ultimately have control. So you can go in and say, it's not quite where I want it. I'm going to adjust these things. So then you can fine tune. But the whole idea is you plug it in and you save money, and we do it without you having to do anything.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for correcting
yes.
me. I always imagined it on top of the fridge,
yes.
so it's
yes.
good for me to get my vision of it correct. Can you talk about pre-Orison?
Well, the funny thing about me is if you look at my kind of, I don't want to say it's my entrepreneurial beginning. It's my entrepreneurial beginning in really home automation. It started back in like 99 timeframe. Between 99 and 2002, we had put together the beginnings of a partnership between ADT Tyco Gateway, who used to make plasma televisions and computers, right? Good old Ted Waite. And then the land development company that I was working with. And so Gateway sold to eMachines. ADT wanted to break everything up in these sort of markets as opposed to being a U.S. market carrier for this. And the problem is that the land developer was all across. And so it doesn't work to have a different rep in every single one. It just didn't make sense. And it doesn't hurt to say. So Newland is the land developer. And the land developer said, well, since we lost our home automation piece in Gateway and ADT isn't there anymore, what other group could do, because we didn't want to design and build products. We wanted to use others and then make this program right. And so in that, we brought on LG and did a bunch of things with their home automation stuff. And people don't even know this stuff. So do you know Parrot, that makes the little remote control like drones that you run on your iPhone? Whatever.
No.
Okay. So Parrot has been around. People don't know this. They've been around since like the early 90s, and their whole platform was on voice automation and connecting to cars in general. And so they were Siri way before Siri. I mean, way before Siri. And so we brought them in with LG to do this home automation house. And the reason why I bring that up to you, it's been this long that I've been in this. So I went through, you know, my tenure with Newland and USGBC and did all that. The market crashed in 2007, 2008, and I kind of reassessed what I wanted to do in life. So I started another company that was born out of that early company, because that never ended. It was called Ontiriors, and we were the largest low voltage integration company for production builders across the US up through about 2006. And so, again, always a kind of a home automation vent, but I figured through all of that, number one, it's not doing anything to help with our environmental stewardship. Number two, it's just a bunch of gadgets, and I always felt like the gadgets are gonna go away as technology converges. And so I started my next venture, which was actually where we originally met, if you remember, called MyWidget.
I thought we met Peak NRG.
No, I came back to you at Peak NRG because that was after MyWidget. But MyWidget was, it's kind of a funny. So MyWidget was building management for the utilities to be able to deploy that did everything that you're now seeing. So I was well before Nest, so the smart thermostat that was a learning thermostat, and I have patents on that, by the way, which is really a whole nother topic. we did energy monitors that we used, Rogowski coils, everyone was using CT clamps, we had a bunch. But we had this whole package. We had a satellite irrigation system that worked off the NOAA network that actually would, if it's raining in real time, it would turn your sprinklers off, like it managed everything for you, slope, sunlight, all of those things. And so we had all these things. But
those are really important things, and they're still not
there
as out there as they need to be to be valuable to people.
But it was still too far ahead of the curve. And so after...
It still is.
I know, it still is. To some extent. Yes, yes, right. And we'll see some of those things kind of come to fruition as Orison progresses, because we actually bought all of the IP from that company and brought it into Orison. So the point of building management is all still there, and how do we serve people in a way that is environmentally, you know, effective. But when I actually decided to mothball my widget, which I have to tell you, you don't remember. So the funny thing is you are actually one of the key drivers of why Orison exists today. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So at my widget, I came in and sat with you, and I forget the other. I could go back and figure it out pretty quickly. But the other four people from SDG&E and Semper at the time, and we sat down and we put a bunch of black boxes in the middle of the table. And after an hour of talking, honestly, the response was kind of like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, but it's complicated to get in.
I hope this is a good story.
This is a great story. No, this is a great story.
You told me I was a butthead.
Yes, yeah. Well, we used choice words back then, but no.
I'm trying to keep it rated G.
Yeah, right. So after those meetings and really feeling like not sure what to do with the company, and I mothballed the company, 2 months later, so it would have been February of 2013, I guess it was January of 2013. I got a call from John Holmes, and he said, hey, we're really sorry, because I don't know if you know this, but we actually won a contract with SDG&E to do 20,000 installs of our energy monitor. And the company that I was acquiring their technology to have a market-ready piece from literally decided on Friday that our deal is done. We're great. On Monday, I got a call from them, and they said that they're going to scuttle the deal because they need to focus on their IPO, and they killed it. Well, then I had to go back to SDG&E and say, I'm sorry, we can't do the program after all. And so that was in like November of 2012. And then January 2013, Holmes gives me a call and he says, hey, there's this thing out there that we all kind of know is coming, and it's called DERs, distributed energy resources, but honestly we don't really know what it is. We all kind of have an inkling and an idea of what it's going to be, but we really liked working with you and we'd like your ideas on what you think it would be. Would you be willing to write us a white paper on what is a DER? Like, it can be product based, it can be anything, just come up with something to kind of help us focus. So I wrote a white paper on distributed energy products on the customer side of the meter, and it was through a bunch of things. But what drove the design of that was the conversation we had about our product and how painful it was to sit down and explain to you and your team that this is going to change the lives of people, looking at a bunch of black boxes that there was no emotional tie to on the table. And so when I designed Orison, I wanted to have the very first thing was, I come into a room, I set the thing on the table, and people go, that is really cool, I want one. How much does it cost and what does it do, right? Before they even know. And that's actually every single time we pitch Orison, it is always the same thing. Everyone goes, dude, I want one of those. What is it?
Like the Nest did for the thermostat.
That's right. And so it was those meetings that actually drove industrial design and how important it is to get people to relate to it. And even the name of Orison is based off being able to say, I have Orison in my house, opposed to I have the Nest thermostat in my house. That's not personal. But if I said, I have Bob at my house, you're going to go, okay, I have Orison at my house. It's personal, right? And so everything has been designed around how we actually emotionally tie to people and bring products to people that they can easily, doesn't matter what side of the fence they're on, buy into doing something good for them, which is in turn doing something good for the environment, which gets us to that end goal, which is where we started in the beginning.
Yeah. I remember at, I think it was an MIT Enterprise Forum event.
Yep.
You had a table.
Yep.
That was a big event for me because I remember having a great conversation with you.
Yep.
Maybe you remember what it was about better than I do, but I was excited about the fact that you were moving into energy storage.
Yes, yes.
And then I also was on the panel. I was moderating it with David Andreessen from Pi Energy.
Yep.
And we ended up becoming friends. Nice. And Pi Energy is one of those companies I'm very excited to work with. Yeah. I did a podcast with them.
Yep, nice.
With Phil Layton, the CEO, and David Andreessen.
Yep, yep.
And that was a very nice event for me because I made some really good contacts and found some great technologies.
Yeah, definitely MIT forums. It's funny, it's sort of the long-term aftermath. Like, things didn't happen for us right away, but it's the relationships that were started at MIT forums. Because actually, I didn't want to start, this can sound funny, I didn't want to start another company. This is my fifth startup, and I was really tired. And after my widget had to be mothballed, I was really doing soul searching on what I wanted to do. And so because Holmes asked me to do that, and I put it together, and it got a lot of really good reviews, they put me in touch with a company I won't name, that they had a contract with NAVFAC Northwest down in San Diego to do 50 kilowatt hours worth of storage, but they were really testing the monitoring and sort of back-end software stuff that they were doing. And they needed a storage provider. And so they said, hey, you say you can do storage just from my white paper. Do you want to bid on a project? And I'm like, well, I got nothing to do right now. I'm looking for a job, right? So I'm like, sure. Well, I won a project with NAVFAC Northwest to do 50 kilowatt hours with the storage. So I started putting a company together, which was Peak NRG, which was the first stab at just putting a name down so I had a placeholder. And and so this all kind of started really off of you, but it was all driven by those learnings from that. I mean, obviously my tech background and everything that I'd done before, but it was that was the catalyst of what started Orison.
Yeah. Well, glad we could be of help.
Sure.
You've already talked about some setbacks.
Yes.
Can you think of some really difficult ones that was very hard to get past? How it affects you today?
Yeah. So in 2017, we had a partner come to us that actually, because we had done a Kickstarter campaign, they got visibility to who we are and what we did. They said, look, we're tasked by some of the big box retail stores to put your product on the shelf or put a product like yours on the shelf. We want to partner with you and invest in you and help you do that. And we'll do it all around the world because we represent most of the largest big box stores around the world. And we spent 8 to 9 months doing due diligence with them. And at the end of the day, you guys can probably figure this out, but without saying too many names, we were literally a week away from closing the deal, $10 million investment, and being put in all the big box stores and our manufacturer, because they're going to manufacture for us. One of the other battery storage companies out there.
We
won't say which one. That's why I said you can figure it out. But got a licensing deal to put their energy storage products in Home Depot. And I don't know this 100%, but I'm pretty sure they got an exclusivity, which caused the group we were working with to have to back off and not do our deal. And so at that point, I really thought the company was dead. We did a little bit of soul searching. That was November, December timeframe. So we had the holidays anyway, and not a lot was going on. And so in January, we were accepted into a program called Free Electrons. And I still laugh because we don't know who applied for us because we didn't apply for it.
That's pretty incredible.
Isn't that wild?
When you compare it to the fact that things were going the wrong way.
Yes.
And then some magic happens.
That's right. Well, that's why I say the Lord's always had a hand in this, and I believe this is his doing, because he's guided us along through this whole process. So anyway, so Free Electrons comes along and says, oh, out of 570 entrants, which we weren't an entrant, which is funny, 30 of you, if you guys want to come, we're going to fly you and your CTO for a week for intense meetings in Portugal. And so they flew us there, and out of the 30 groups that were brought to Portugal, 30 startups, energy startups, they down selected to 12, and we were the number one pick coming out of Portugal. And then throughout the year, we went Portugal, we went San Francisco, Australia, and Berlin, and they paid for everything. And so we worked with 10 utilities for the entire time, same 10 utilities, and a very intense program. But honestly, if you look at incubators out there, there is nothing better than this program. And if anybody can get involved in it, I highly recommend it. And that turned it around for us. It resulted in a $1.5 million investment with a strategic partner out of Australia. And we're now moving down the road. So it really changed the world for us.
Yeah. So I asked about setbacks. Yes. And you told me about a huge success.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the setback was we lost the deal, right? Yeah, and we thought the company was gone. So
yeah.
So anyway, so for us, last year was a very stressful, very hard year, but it resulted in an amazing turnaround for the company. Last week, I just got back from Australia where we did the first install of our energy monitor, and we actually hit every metric we thought we were going to hit while we were there, and it performed better than we anticipated with the first version of sensors, and the new sensors that we already have are 10 times more higher fidelity than the previous version. So it means that what we achieved, which is actually good enough for market ready, is 10 times less than what we're actually going to send to market. And so we're hoping to see that product in full production and certified by June of this year. And so we'll have the first monitors going out the door, which will come with a simulator. And the simulator will show people exactly what Orsyn storage will do for them under their current circumstances so they can play with it before they actually buy at the end of the year Orsyn energy storage. So,
I had an English teacher that used to say that you couldn't appreciate the sunshine without rain.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that. Yeah. I love living in San Diego, but I do think it's sweeter.
Yes.
I do think it's sweeter. Yes. And I think those difficult times followed by awesome times.
I agree.
Is very nice.
I agree.
Very
I
nice.
Agree.
So talk about your vision of the future with regard to climate change and your company. Mm-hmm. How do you see the world in 10, 20 years?
Well, for us, I actually think it's going to be a fairly rapid growth period. And it's because of the indicators, the immense amount of interest coming from some of the largest global utilities and from people in general. We have people signing up, putting their name on the pre-order list, I mean, daily. And we haven't done any marketing other than 3 years ago, our Kickstarter campaign. That was it. And we continue to get people from around the world. So what I think is going to happen with us, and I hope it goes this way, is that our biggest problem is can we manufacture fast enough to get to the demand that's out there? Because what's happened is the service that we provide is yet to be fully realized in how it actually helps the environment, the utilities, and everybody else in between. But once we start deploying, it'll all start to come to fruition. And what I mean by that is there's poor communication between the distributed services operator, so poles and wires that are local to you, your transmission distribution guys, and the production guys. There's a massive amount of loss that's happening that nobody's sure who's paying for, but everybody's actually paying for it. And because the communication is so bad right now between all of these groups and regulatory bodies, finding a solution for a very known problem is difficult because who's going to pay for it? And so one of the things we're testing in Australia is exactly that, these virtual power plants, but doing it through negative demand on the customer side of the meter. And when we do that and we can show, then it'll place a value on it, and then it'll make those guys actually have to do the searching of who's paying for that, whose balance sheet is that actually on, and how do we, you know, cut that, because they're going to rush to say, oh, it's on mine, because they're going to want to reduce their overall balance sheet, right, instead of keep paying it. So as soon as we get to market, going back to your questions, how do I see the future? So I believe next year will be a very powerful year because we're going to do a 4,000 unit pilot in New South Wales in Australia. That pilot will be enough density that it'll be actually able to show a meaningful amount of change on the grid. From that, we're going to see how rapidly it explodes. And my hope is that we're going to get a large enough company, Amazon, Facebook, somebody that comes in that actually wants to help make that vision go faster, because we can. From doing that, it literally will reduce everybody's energy bill. It'll enable more solar to be put in, because now you have resources dealing with the constant fluctuation and minute by minute fluctuation, not just hour by hour or whatever that the grid's trying to deal with that it wasn't designed for, right? And so you're going to see places like Hawaii literally overnight become totally renewable.
I was talking to Sunrun, I believe it was, and they said that almost all of the installations of solar they're doing right now in Hawaii comes with energy storage.
It has to.
Because the business case is so strong to do that.
Yeah.
But with your batteries, they don't need to have solar.
Nope.
They don't need to have someone install it. You're going to be in every home in Hawaii.
Right. Well, think
and
about...
And they also get the reliability benefit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and think about like Manhattan that has an aging grid. We can put grid resources now in every building and turn them into very large batteries that actually take the strain off of that old, old, old grid. So it's not just solar areas. It's areas like that that have been around for a long time,
yeah,
right?
You're independent of solar and still have a great business case.
That's right. And so ultimately, if you look at right-sizing the grid, getting rid of the attrition or the errors that are happening in the grid that is there right now, I think our impact is going to be extremely meaningful. But beyond that, the thing that's really cool about what we're doing is if you look at like cell phones now in Africa and India in particular, they've spanned half the population where there's never going to be poles and wires giving them a landline, right? We now can do pods for villages of a small amount, because believe it or not, a 2 kilowatt hour system in most of those environments will power 4 or 5 homes for 6 hours at night. And so you have a small amount of solar and our storage unit. You actually run it through the cloud because it's got a cellular resource. You're creating virtual power grids around the world that are totally wireless. And we literally can do an equalizer and fix those areas.
My first episode of the podcast was with Terry Moan.
Yeah, yeah.
And he spent some time doing that.
Yes, yes.
And he
yes.
enjoyed it very much.
Yes.
And it did a lot of good
in
a lot of places.
It does. And a lot of people are passionate about it. And the reality is the thing that I love about it is I think it's financially feasible too. It's not just a pipe dream of philanthropy.
Since he did it, the cost now has dropped dramatically.
Yes, yes.
And your product is one of those products that can play in that game very effectively.
Yeah.
You mentioned Hawaii, you mentioned Africa, but in California, you know there's the duck curve?
Yeah.
I still call it the Anderson curve.
Okay.
Because there was this super intelligent guy, Rob Anderson at SDG&E, and he was the first person that drew the curve for me.
Oh, interesting.
And I wanted to call it something,
so
I called it the Anderson curve. That was before other people named it the duck curve. But I think it would be incredible to help manage that duck curve because 100%. There is definitely solar today that is curtailed.
Yes.
A lot of hours.
Yes.
Instead of curtailing it, put it in your energy storage.
That's right.
Then at night when the incredible ramp up happens, and that's very hard for the grid to do, you're reducing the need. First of all, you're filling it at the belly of the Anderson.
Yeah.
And you're the neck of the Anderson, okay, I'll go back to duck. The neck of the duck, you're killing it at the top.
Yeah.
You know, you're cutting it off the top at the head.
Which is negative demand.
Yeah.
That's the whole
thing.
So
you're reducing the impact on the grid, and you're helping make money for the customer or helping the utility, however you get it out there and deployed.
That's right. We actually, so a couple years back, I guess it's been about 4 years ago now, very early on, because of the NAVFAC Northwest contract that we went into, we started talking with one of the other bases that's out in the desert, and that base has 2 megawatts of solar, but 1 full megawatt, because it's on a power purchase agreement, is literally cords dangling, hanging in the wind, because they're at the end of a feeder line. And because they have a thermal plant that actually is feeding the line, there's so much congestion they can't put any more on. And so the utility won't even allow them to plug it in. So you have an entire asset sitting on a military base just rotting, and it's not plugged in.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. And so the whole thing with them is because they're a high security base, with our product, when we can actually deploy it, they're very interested because they don't need contractors to come on. They should have clearance issues and all that. We can mail it to them and they can deploy it and then put that asset back online and actually take them off grid.
And they would buy a lot of them.
They would buy a lot of them. It's a very big contract, yes.
Very nice. Very nice. Hey, do you have any questions for me?
Well, I think probably going back, and you probably answered this in past podcasts, but why are you doing this? Why is Lee Cravat wanting to change the world?
I have answered it on many other podcasts in different ways.
Yep.
Each time I try to do a different flavor, it seemed like the best way for me to help.
Okay.
I am not ready. I've worked very hard for many years. I'm not ready to do a startup and work 80 hours a week again. I've done it.
Yeah.
It was very hard. It took a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Also successes.
Yeah.
But I think I wanted to leverage what I have to offer. I know a lot of great people that are putting in that effort.
Yeah.
And people don't know
what's
going on. They don't know about the products. They don't know about the sacrifice. Yeah. And I think if people did, it would convince them. And I think a big part of solving these challenges is getting people on the same page and having them all rowing in the same direction.
Yep.
And I actually enjoy doing this. So again, it comes back to being selfish.
Yep.
I'm selfish in that I want to make an impact. I'm selfish in that I like to gab.
Yeah.
I'm selfish in that it doesn't feel like work to me.
Yeah.
And I can make a difference.
But that's the right reasons for doing it, right? I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, it's we need to do the things that are mentally and physically and emotionally healthy for us, as well as profit and then environmentally, right? And at the end of the day, if we're stressed, if things are taken away from us, if we don't like our lives, we're not going to be good for anybody or the environment.
Just the opposite.
That's right. That's right. Destroys everything.
Yeah.
And so that's why sort of my soapbox, make it unbelievable for people. Give it people everything they want, but do it in a way that's responsible. And I believe it can happen. So,
me too.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm going to wrap it up.
Awesome.
And I'm going to do that with a rap. For some people, it's a gut feeling. For some, it's a fact. But most people know there's an earth impact. This is a chance to have your own power. You can do it in hunks of 2 kilowatt hour. The utilities don't mind because you're not hurting them. You're not exporting and you don't need NEM. I thought you put it on top of the fridge, but that gets you in a cooling bind. But you can still use it with the fridge because there's room behind. Eventually, you'll see this at Home Depot or a mall. What's super exciting is that you can self-install. I'm so glad we met at SDG&E, but I'll always think of you as Peak NRG.
Amen. Very good.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
Eric's journey has been challenging and exciting, coming close to ending in 2017, but rebounding with a mysterious entry into the Free Electrons program, where they finished in the top 10 out of 570 entrants and are back on the road to success. I love the self-installation feature of the product, not just because of the planning, cost, and time savings, but because it makes it simple. For energy products, something most people don't think about, to make it into the home and make it successful, keeping it simple, silly, or KISS is going to be key. If you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. If you like the improvised wrap-ups at the end of each episode, and you're in San Diego and want some great laughs, most nights I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv, or both. To confirm specific dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. Eric's journey in the energy world has truly been fascinating, culminating with Orison. Orison not only provides a simple, easy-to-install microgrid in your home or business, it also pays for itself by interacting with the grid automatically, helping your pocketbook, integrating more renewables into the grid, and doing it in a way that increases the value of the grid, all extremely important to help mitigate climate change.